Tests are being carried out for the Ebola virus and isolation procedures have been put in place after the death of a man in County Donegal. He's Desi Quinn from Mount Charles in the southwest of the county, and I'm joined now on the line by the local priest, Father Adrian Gavigan. Good morning to you, Father Gavigan.
Good morning, Sean.
And
good morning.
Thank you for coming on the line. Tell me about what happened and how news reached the area about the possibility of Ebola virus being connected with the sad passing of Desi Quinn.
But yeah, we here in the community here in Mount Charles, we're just kind of waking up to the news, of course, first of all, that, you know, Desi had passed on, a young man in the community here, that there's just devastation for the family themselves. You know, a son and brother has been really lost, truly lost, and of course here to the community too. But it's kind of strange that, you know, well, for the last couple of weeks, Desi has been kind of treated for malaria, and up to yesterday evening, 6 o'clock, when we heard the news, the bulletin, or, you know, it broke through from the spokesperson of the HSE that, I suppose then, with this news, breaking news that there's an investigation into Ebola, we're waiting now and finds of from the medical team.
I understand, Father Gavigan, that you've been away on holidays yourself in recent times, and this is something you came back to deal with. Had Desi passed on when you got home, or how did things unfold?
It unfolded in the context that I was literally entering the county when I got a phone call from the local undertaker at about just before 3 o'clock that morning. That the death occurred of Desi, and that, you know, that he called me to assist at the house. So that's when I found out that Desi had passed on.
So how, Father Gavigan, did you yourself become aware of Desi's passing and then your involvement, obviously, with the family in the last couple of days?
Yeah, no, well, I just had come back from holiday on the same night that I was travelling down from Dublin back to Donegal, that I got word from my local undertaker that we had a death in the parish, and of course that it was Desi. You know, it's really rocked and shaken the family and indeed the community here.
I understand that the Quinn family, it's a large and extensive family, well known in the area, is that right?
Oh, they're very well known and very much part and a very good part to the community here. You know, they're very proactive in the community itself. Yeah.
How did Desi end up working in Sierra Leone, do you know?
As far as I know, it was with an Irish company that he went out to work with. So, yeah, he was out there since the beginning of the year and was out there with an Irish company just.
Did you know him yourself personally?
Well, the family, more so. Desi would be kind of coming and going quite a bit from the community, if you want to put it that way. I would know the family quite well, the parents, and indeed a lot of the... He didn't have his own house in Mount Charles, if you want to put it that way.
You mentioned HSE spokespersons and reports on the TV news last night. Is that how the family and people locally found out about this possibility, and it is only that, of the Ebola virus being the cause of Desi Quinn's death?
When I heard the news, the breaking news, if you want to call it, in the context of that the investigation was, you know, to bring in the medical team for suspected case of Ebola, then that was the first the family heard of it, because I went down, of course, when I heard that, the devastation of that news, I went down to the family to see how are they getting on, you know, and how are they coping with that news, no mind the news of the devastation of their family and their, you know, their son and their brother, that this was just another dimension that, you know. So I went back down to the family to see how they were and how they're getting on. And that was the first that they knew of that news, that it was that. Basically, the nation knew before the family knew that, you know, that this was going to be investigated.
So just to be clear, Father Gavigan, are you saying that there was no contact from either the hospital or the HSE, that they literally, the grieving family, within hours of Desi Quinn's death, the first they knew about this possible connection with the Ebola virus was from the national television or radio news?
From what the spokesperson of the HSE said on the bulletin, yeah.
And what did people make of all that?
Well, I can tell you, I was very angry myself, if you want to hear that response. I was quite shocked and angry. I thought it was very impersonal and very, I don't know who was taking that responsibility of making that statement without consulting the family or letting them, like, giving them the news. I know it's hard news to give to anyone, but at least to tell them before it would go in, you know, into the news and into the national news.
It does seem extraordinary, because normally in these situations, I think it's true that the HSE would be very careful and very cautious to intrude.
Exactly. That surprises me terribly. I mean, this is me talking to the family. It's crazy.
In the meantime, of course, you I gather you performed or conducted the last rites on Desi Quinn's remains, and now you have, along with people in the community, there to prepare, presumably, for his funeral.
Yeah, we have to find out arrangements and so on and so forth. Yet nothing has been until the body's to be released from the hospital. But then, yeah, we'll. I suppose when we get a few answers to this, this suspect case of Ebola, then we will find out then what we can do and go forward from there. The priority now for the family and the friends of Desi is to bring him home. And indeed to give him his peace and rest, here in Montreal.
And joining me now is on the line Professor Sam McConkie, head of the Department of International Health and Tropical Medicine at the Royal College of Surgeons in Dublin. Good morning to you, Sam. Thank you for joining us. I should say we recorded that conversation earlier with Father Gavigan, and since then the HSE have told us it was in contact with some members of the Quinn family from the outset. Clearly some break in communications breakdown somewhere along the line. We may be wiser about it at the end of the day. But first of all, from the limited amount that we know at this stage, how likely or possible is it that this will be the first confirmed case of Ebola in this country?
Unfortunately, there are many, many things that can cause death in somebody who's a returned traveller, particularly from West Africa. So I spent a couple of years working as a doctor in Sierra Leone and know a bit about the risks there. The sort of likely things would be, unfortunately, malaria. It can kill people. There's severe type malaria, Plasmodium falciparum. Most people who have that would be in a hospital for treatment. So I know you'd mentioned in your clip that this man may have been on malaria treatment, but generally people would be in close follow-up and thoroughly cared for if they did have malaria. Similarly, typhoid and many other causes of septic shock. People get sepsis from bacterial infection. So unfortunately, returned travellers who get fever, it's a medical emergency, need to seek treatment promptly.
Clearly, people's sympathies will be with the Quinn family, and it is almost unseemly, I suppose, to be speculating on the possible outcome, but nonetheless, it is a matter of great public concern. Now, how should people react if, in fact, it is confirmed that this is Ireland's first case of Ebola?
I think in Ireland we're fortunate. We do have a network of contact tracing, public health staff, doctors and nurses who, every time there's a case of TB or salmonella or food poisoning or gastroenteritis or various other serious infections, already have been going around our community, talking to family, talking to contacts, talking to other people who may have been involved in the incident, and doing what's called contact tracing, providing information to those people, finding out, are they well, are they ill, do they need medical attention, and are there risks of them spreading the disease further. So in Ireland, we have a network of people doing contact tracing and doing infection control, and they would be reorganized and reorientated towards helping deal with the contacts of any definite case of Ebola. If some of those people have had contact with a case of Ebola, they'd have to check in once a day or more often with the public health staff over a period of 3 weeks to make sure they're okay. And if any had symptoms of flu-like symptoms or fever or chills or headache or malaise, they would need urgent medical investigation and specialist tests to see if they in fact were developing Ebola.
So, to some extent, it appears that there's a significant overlap between the symptoms, say, for something like malaria and Ebola.
Very much so, yeah.
And what about the general, I suppose, global response to what's been going on in West Africa. And again, the increasing fears about the spread of it. I mean, we had, for instance, Donald Trump saying nobody should be let into America if it's confirmed that they're suffering from this. Now, as in fact, it happened only yesterday. I think a doctor and a nurse who were brought back and given treatment were discharged from hospital.
Exactly. So it suggests that Donald Trump was wrong. The American government has made the decision to repatriate two Americans and has provided them with medical care. And as you correctly said, they've been discharged from hospital and are now fine. So in the United States, they've successfully, safely repatriated two people into Atlanta, Georgia, cared for them in proper modern ways with intensive care. There's been no outbreak of Ebola, as far as I've heard, around Ebola, around Emory or around Atlanta. That has been a sort of sequelae to those two imported cases, and the two cases have survived. As you probably know, in Spain, there was a sad case of a priest who'd been in Liberia who was also repatriated to Madrid. He sadly died, but there hasn't been an outbreak of secondary and tertiary cases around the Madrid in the last few weeks. So what we're finding is that in Spain and in the United States, the health authorities and the government, who I'm sure are involved, are confident enough that we can prevent the onward spread of the chain of transmission of Ebola. We're confident enough to be able to deliberately import a person who we know has it into the country and to look after them with all the proper modern healthcare.
And you would say,
In Nigeria, I will also point out, there's been one man, as I'm sure you know and listeners know, have flown into Nigeria, and again, 10 immediate contacts of him have caught Ebola, but there hasn't been a widespread epidemic happening in Nigeria. Whereas in contrast, in Sierra Leone, Liberia, where the health system's very, very poor, very few doctors, very few nurses, no electricity, no roads, none of the organisational structures that you need to organise a coherent, systematic, thorough, meticulous response to Ebola, in the absence of that, the epidemic has gone crazy. My view is those people need our help. They need staff, they need money, they need equipment. Otherwise, it's going to run wilder in Sierra Leone and Liberia.
But in the event of it reaching these shores, you say we're well prepared. There is this, I think, special unit in the Matara Hospital, for instance, that can deal with situations.
I would put us more in the category like Spain, the United States and Nigeria, and I believe those countries' example, we would be able to follow those and prevent a widespread epidemic. Unfortunately, if people catch it, it's a very, very serious illness, and even with all the best care in the world, people are likely to some people will pass away from it. So you probably know there's some new drugs and vaccines being used, perhaps controversially, but I would also share with your listeners the importance of good quality intensive care. That artificial homeostasis, where your fluids and oxygen and everything is maintained artificially by the nurses and doctors in an intensive care unit, is really important for people who have septic shock.
Okay, we leave it there. Professor Sam McConkie, Head of the Department of International Health and Tropical Medicine at the Royal College of Surgeons in Dublin, thank you very much indeed for joining us.